He's Braden Gull. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. It's Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. As we have been doing all week, it's SEC Media Week. It's like Christmas in July for SEC football fans.
But no presents.
No presents, yeah. Well, I don't know. I think everybody still kind of feels like they're getting a present because they're going to find some positive for their team. So it feels like everybody's looking at it and finding some reason why we can have a winner and a loser in SEC Media Days. Like, I'm not saying society's gotten competitive. I'm just saying that press conferences in boxing now are actually being scored by boxing experts. So that's where we are. The McGregor-Mayweather on Twitter, ESPN was scoring the press conferences. So the same is happening.
Saban has gone 10 rounds with the SEC media, and he's up 10-8.
So far. And everybody's scared to score it any other way. Kevin Skarbinski from AL.com. Kevin, man, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us.
Hey, glad to do it, guys. Hey, not only did Nick Saban, as usual, win every round yesterday, he blew kisses at 9 other programs in the league by name, saying he has respect for them. And wasn't it interesting? He managed to leave out Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina, and what's that other school in the state of Alabama that happens to be in the same division as Alabama? Oh, that's right, Auburn. He just obviously an unintentional oversight on his part.
Did any of that sort of feel like bless their hearts, like where he was, he's just, I mean, there's sort of a condescending level of that, right?
The condescension was dripping from the podium when he finished that little dissertation. And didn't you love at the end when he threw in, and Vanderbilt went to a bowl game. Vanderbilt had a winning record. Well, they actually didn't have a winning record because they lost the bowl game, but they did have a nice season by Vanderbilt standards. But it was very much a patting them on the head and saying, yes, bless their hearts.
Well, we've reached a point, like, he's not incorrect, Kevin. We've reached this point where he's not incorrect that there is great parity in the league. It just doesn't include Alabama. And so we've got all of that. And then there's Alabama, which raises the question, and this sort of became my theme throughout the course of being down in Hoover, which is, listen, expectations aren't going to change for most of these programs. They almost all of them, 6 or 7 of them at least, expect to compete for conference championships. But I think we've almost reached the point where we have to preach to fans, 9-3 is going to be the best you're going to get out of this deal until Nick Saban retires.
And readjusting the expectations of a fan base is a very difficult thing to do, especially when you have a long history of success. As you know, the six traditional powers in the league, the strongest six in the league, that they split up 3 on one side, 3 on the other when they went to divisions in 1992. You know, it's hard to tell a Tennessee fan or an LSU fan, just wait till Nick Saban retires. Then you'll be able to compete for championships again. Until then, just win as many games as you can other than Alabama, and things will be all right.
Kevin Skarbinski joining us from AL.com. And Kevin, there were some quotes yesterday from Nick Saban, not a lot there that caused fire, but some Vols fans have gotten sort of upset with their coach because Saban came in and said, hopefully we won't waste the failure when speaking of not winning the national championship. What does that say about Nick Saban and sort of the way Alabama views last season?
That's a terrific contrast, and you're the first person I've heard make it, between Nick Saban and Butch Jones, for example. When Butch Jones was asked when he came to Hoover whether last year was a disappointment, he said no. And every Tennessee fan, I imagine, who heard that cringed, because I guarantee you every Tennessee fan I know thought last year was a disappointment, that they missed a tremendous opportunity to win the SEC East and get to Atlanta for the first time in a while. Meanwhile, here's Alabama playing for the national championship, coming up one play short, and Nick Saban calls it a failure. That is a direct reflection of the attitude of the head coaches, of where they are in their careers, where their programs are in their history. And it just indicates part of the reason that Alabama is playing for championships on a consistent basis and winning them is that that's the standard. And we all laughed when Nick Saban said there's parity in the league. And that exists from 2 to 14. But when he said he respects everyone, yeah, there was a level of condescension there. But there's also a kernel of truth in that. When in 2013, he was inducted into the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame. They collect memorabilia from the inductees to put it in a display case. One of the items they got from Nick Saban from his secretary, actually, he wasn't happy when he found out about it, was a game plan from the 2009 Florida International game. It was just as thick. It looked like 3 volumes of an encyclopedia put together. It was just as thick as an LSU game plan or an Auburn game plan, because he takes everybody seriously when he's preparing for them, and he tries to filter that down to his team, and that's part of the reason that they are as good as they are.
Yes, he is a bizarre human being. There's no question about that, and the greatest of all time. Kevin, let me ask you this, though. He was asked sort of about Tua Tagovailoa, which is this great player, big-time prospect, obviously has a huge arm, can throw the football, plays quarterback at Alabama, or backup quarterback, or does he? It seems like he's admitted that he's going to play, but also then got offended when somebody asked him about whether or not there's a quarterback controversy.
His answer to me was indicative of his concern of how he's going to handle that situation. And it was interesting that he did indicate he wants to play Tagovailoa, and not just in mop-up duty, and not only if Jalen Hurts gets hurt, because you want your backup to be ready if you do have to use him at some point. So he's got to balance that. He's got to juggle it to a degree, because you do have two very talented young players, one only a sophomore, one a freshman. And so how that works, and how the fan base reacts, and not just the media, but the fan base, you know, if Jalen Hurts struggles, and let's not forget, he struggled terribly in the passing game in his last two games. He also put his team in the lead in the national championship game with 2 minutes left with a really strong, gutsy drive. So the kid did so many good things last year. But what if he struggles against Florida State? What if he throws a couple of picks? What if he turns the ball over, puts it on the ground? How quickly in that situation does Nick Saban say, you know what, let's give Jalen a series on the sideline. Let's throw Tua out there and see what he can do. And then, you know, the first time he does that, if he does that, that's going to just ramp up the conversation even more and drive Nick Saban even crazier.
He's Kevin Skrbinski from AL.com. But the question is, Kevin, even if they get trash play at quarterback and they stink, do they still win the SEC?
and I know that's an extreme example. They're not going to get trash play at quarterback. They may not get Heisman play at quarterback, but they're not going to get trash play because they're so good everywhere else. And that's another thing that was comical, unintentionally so, that Nick Saban said yesterday, was he pulled out the "we're young" excuse, really young maybe as we've been since 2012. Well, last I checked, what happened in 2012, they won the national championship. So being young didn't exactly hurt them then. It won't exactly hurt them now. There will be guys many people have never heard of who will be drafted from this Alabama team, particularly on the defense. There are going to be a lot of guys who haven't made a name for themselves yet who will do that this season.
Obviously, it appears like Auburn is going to be the top challenger to Alabama. They certainly get him at the end of the season, which I think helps them. But is this a Jeremy Johnson situation with Jared Stidham, or is this a guy we can really truly believe in and Auburn actually is the top challenger to Alabama?
I'll give you the inside answer. I don't know. And as much confidence as Gus Malzahn and Chip Lindsey and that staff have in Jared Stidham, well, those guys, minus Lindsey, who wasn't there at the time, so he has no fingerprints on this one, they had a lot of confidence in Jeremy Johnson. They missed terribly on Jeremy Johnson's ability to step up and be the starting quarterback. They have a tremendous amount of confidence in Stidham. Stidham's a completely different quarterback. He's a completely different person, and it's unfair to saddle him with the failures of Jeremy Johnson. So we need to give him a chance to see what he can do. They love him. My question is not so much about whether Jared Stidham can perform, but is how is that dynamic going to work? Is Gus Malzahn, has he really retired his clipboard? Has he really turned it over to Chip Lindsey? Is he really willing to have an offense that skews more towards a 50-50 run-pass split? Because Gus Malzahn's a downhill running guy. For all the bells and whistles that you get from that offense, he likes to run the ball hard between the tackles, and his best teams have been able to do that. And they've got the personnel to do that, starting with Cameron Petway. So I still want to see that, especially if they struggle. Look at week two at Clemson, which will have a very good defense, again, as they have every year under Dabo Sweeney. How are they going to handle that? How is Gus Malzahn going to react? The first time they hit a bump in the road, is he going to continue to have faith in Chip Lindsey and Jared Stidham?
You can read him on AL.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Kevin Skrbinski. Kevin, man, we appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Fantastic stuff from Kevin breaking down.
Don't you
things.
Take my FIU game plan book.
Well,
the hell is wrong with you?
We just learned that about Nick Saban. Yesterday on Jared and the GM, we learned that if you want to interview Nick Saban, it may not actually even be Nick Saban that shows up to do the interview. You'll hear the story. You'll find out who did show up. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
both know I'm not what you need.
I can barely even speak over her. Oh, God. Yeah, sang it. Sang it,
We
Whitney.
Know what Julian did last night.
He's Braden Gull. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council. I thought he was a little emotional this morning, and then we find out, well, he watched The Bodyguard last night. So, of course, I mean, that...
does it to everybody.
That does it. It's rare that a cover is better than the original, and I will say that I think that Whitney's cover is better than the original.
Can I say this? Can I say this? Kevin Costner, most underrated actor in the history of motion picture.
Wow.
The Bodyguard, perfect performance. I know it only has like a 39% Rotten Tomatoes. Doesn't matter. Also... playing Elliot Ness in The Untouchables, terrific.
Wow. Untouchables, not going to go with Field of Dreams.
Field of Dreams,
or...
that's up there, okay. too. I'm just saying.
I would like to, I think Kevin Costner is extraordinarily highly rated, so it's hard to say that he's underrated.
Was he also in Bull Durham?
Possibly.
That was him, right?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, so Kevin so. Costner.
Of course
most,
he was in Bull Durham.
Most underrated totally actor in the history of motion pictures.
I mean, that, cheesy sports movies don't do it for me.
That is not cheesy.
Not cheesy.
Susan Sarandon, Tim Robbins, that is one of the great... That might be the... Caddyshack and Bull Durham might be the two greatest sports movies of all time.
I actually put it in the category of wrong.
I take Major League over...
Major League, very good.
Over
very,
Bull Durham any day.
Very high quality. A little bit different type of humor. Maybe not as... The acting, maybe not. Wesley Snipes versus Kevin Costner, okay, maybe not. This is the same level of ability, but I don't think Kevin Costner's underrated, though.
Well, I don't
think
know.
That's the problem. Like,
I think that people...
Isn't he like one of the most popular and successful actors of all time?
People aren't talking about him as much as they should be.
I think that he went through a period where...
It was his last movie.
He made like, didn't he do the Robin Hood thing? And for a little while...
Robin Hood was one of my favorite movies growing up as a kid, which is
people
cheesy.
Were sort of off on him for a little while. I will say this.
That was like 93, though.
I'm not going to make inflammatory comments that caused Twitter to blow up like I did about Forrest Gump. I will say this. If I never see Bull Durham again, I'm not really upset about it.
That's awful,
It was
dude.
Okay. It was okay.
Bull Durham is a great movie.
As a native North Carolinian, I have to be personally offended by that.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah,
that's a great movie.
And Field of Dreams, that's okay.
Oh, my God.
Field of Dreams, okay.
You don't like know. You. You've got a lot of serial killer
tendencies.
As a lifelong
Durham Bulls fan, I'm so mad at you.
You have a lot of serial killer tendencies, Fitzy.
Oh yeah. So that's where we are now that we've broken down movies and my Twitter's going to explode. So this is what we learned
Google's
Kevin Costner. We learned something yesterday, and we learned it on our very own Jared and the GM. And it's funny because earlier this morning, you heard Derek Mason ask what Nick Saban called the single greatest question he'd been asked in the history of all mankind. Slight exaggeration. But he did ask a fantastic question that Saban praised him for. We talked about that earlier. Where Saban wasn't just on our airwaves once yesterday. He was on twice because he was also on with Jared and the GM. And in the process, they were asking for some stories. And he and Floyd have such a great connection that there was a real conversation happening between the two of them. However, he told one interesting story, and it's about how he sort of took his visit and recruitment with LSU, and it's not the way you would think. This is Nick Saban yesterday on Jared and the GM.
Well, you know, all those jobs when I took them had challenges. You know, Michigan State wasn't winning after having a lot of success in the past, and had some challenges there with the NCAA. LSU was 3-8, not doing really well, but a tremendous amount of potential. And you know, Miss Terry, I was afraid to go for the interview at LSU. I don't know if I ever told you this story. And, so I sent her because the media was hounding me about being interested in going to LSU. So I said, I can't go down there. They'll kill me. So I sent her. And she says, you know, they don't have very good facilities. They don't have an academic center. She said, but I went in the rec room. They got some really good-looking players.
Also, quickly before you
love
get,
that.
Before you get to this, also Kevin Costner was in Draft Day, phenomenal movie.
Hang on. Let's do. We're gonna get back to Kevin Costner in a second, Julie. Hold that, save that. First of all, Miss Terry, spectacular that she's like they got some good looking football players down there at LSU.
I think the part that just blew my mind is all of the denial. I haven't spoken to anyone. I'm not talking to anyone. Like, you think back to the Miami days when he was the coach of the Dolphins.
I will not be the head coach at Alabama.
Right. And so you see all these denials. Well, we just learned how he circumvented that entire process. You just send Terry. And that also
makes Terry was down in Austin, Texas.
It also makes him
a couple of years ago.
Not only maybe the smartest coach, but possibly the smartest husband
yes.
of all time. Because let me tell you, you're being recruited. It doesn't matter what you think. It matters what your wife thinks. And send it. And he's made it very apparent, even on social media, as Miss Terry goes, so does the Saban household go. That's a smart move.
Smart
sending
husbandry.
Her down.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. That was so funny that Miss Terry was down in Austin when all the rumors about after Mac Brown had been fired, $10 million a year, are they going to go get Nick Saban? They're trying. Miss Terry's down in Austin. Maybe she was interviewing for the job for Nick Saban. Maybe that's why he didn't go. Maybe that's why she was there. It all comes together. I love it. I think he inadvertently broke news there and told everybody that he actually interviewed for the Texas job.
Yeah. I think
two and a half years ago or three years ago.
And we've now learned, like, you should just follow Miss Terry wherever she goes.
Now, let me ask you this. Let's get to more important issues. Is there anyone that's had a better run from 1987 to 1992? Kevin Costner went The Untouchables, No Way Out, Bull Durham, Field of Dreams. I don't remember The Gunrunner or Revenge.
Dances with Wolves.
But Dances with Wolves, Robin Hood, JFK, and Bodyguard. That's about as good a 5-6 year run as you're going to see in the motion picture world,
okay,
I would imagine.
But
right?
What's happened since then?
I don't know if we need, we don't need to go with it. Wyatt Earp's pretty good, but that's 94. Waterworld was 95.
Waterworld was a flop.
Tin Cup, 96, pretty good.
Nicholas Sparks' critically acclaimed novel, Message in a Bottle. He was
That one was boring. I like 3,000 Miles to Graceland. I thought that was pretty funny, actually, 2001. After that, you have a point.
I mean, so what we've learned is that he's like one of those bands that had a really good run for a few years, and now he's just putting out stuff that really stinks.
Yeah, I guess you didn't see Hidden Figures. I guess that was an important movie for you to watch this past year.
Best
Picture.
I have not. I want to see that one. I have not seen that one yet because I watch movies like a year and a half late. But that's on me.
I haven't seen it. That's a me problem.
Also, can I say once again, Draft Day? He had one of the best draft nights in Cleveland Browns history.
The best draft night.
You know
in
the
Cleveland
best
Browns
part
history.
About draft night for Browns fans is they can watch that movie and realize that at some point the nightmare ends. That's the best part about Draft Day. They can watch it and be like, at least I only have to watch this movie for an hour and a half. And then the nightmare's over. The real life Browns fan has to realize they wake up the next day and it's Groundhog Day.
There was a Field of Dreams 2? That's not real.
Yeah, there was.
Is it a short film?
I don't watch sequels, so I can't tell you.
That's awful. You can't do that. You didn't like Field of Dreams or Bull Durham, really?
I didn't like Dances with Wolves. I did not like Dances with Wolves.
Bodyguard.
Also, he won the Academy Award as a producer. Wait, hold on.
JFK was pretty good.
JFK was good, but I loved that whole JFK thing. Like, I was obsessed with that as a kid.
Yeah,
I'd have been 9 years old when that came out. I probably shouldn't have watched that.
Did you guys leave out Batman versus Superman? I mean,
that might be the worst movie ever made.
There's
in
a
the
point
history
where
of the world.
Draft Day, Batman versus Superman. Like, there's a lot of
crap.
Yeah. Batman was done perfectly by Christopher Nolan, and they decided to kill it after that.
Well, and don't forget, he was in Man of Steel too. He was in the bad Superman reboot. So,
oh my God.
You guys are leaving a lot of bad out of here.
That's mostly bad.
I mean,
after 97, 98, it's been pretty bad for Costner.
My point is, Kevin Costner is like point right there. Most underrated actor in the history of motion pictures.
What's his career salary, like earnings potential? Like, isn't he like
not nearly enough.
I don't know about that.
I'm going to go with in the world of where are they rated, I'm going to go with properly rated. Kevin Costner.
Okay, I'm with you.
Also, here, do me a favor here. So if you go on his.
He's worth $250 million.
So go on his. No, that's not enough. Go on his filmography.
He's like the Steph Curry
on Wikipedia
of
and yes. Click on when he played Elliot Ness in Untouchables. Click on Elliot Ness's photo, and you're going to see something very eerie. They look exactly alike.
That's good movie making. That is fantastic. That's fantastic movie making. I'm not sure how we got into this. I'm not going to make the world explode by saying that Bull Durham and Field of Dreams stink. That would be too big of a statement. I'm not having Forrest Gump 2 here. I'm just saying.
I don't
saying,
remember him in The Big Chill.
I'm just saying it was only okay. That's all I'm saying. There are
great
movies.
Great movie, Big Chill. Love that one.
Sam Kahn going to join us up next. We'll ask Sam.
$250 million.
Yeah, we'll ask Sam what he thinks of the rating, obviously, of Kevin Costner and so much more. We'll do that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. It's Braden Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And thank you to all of you that blew up the phones to let us know that Kevin Costner apparently was in the casket.
He was the dead guy.
Yeah, in The Big Chill. That. So it's amazing the things that...
Kevin Costner was the whole point of the movie, though, if you think about it.
Well,
you've seen the movie.
So
underrated.
We'll start here. Obviously, you know, we bring great college football minds on, and Sam Kahn Jr., one of them, joining us. And we'll start with the most important question you'll be asked all day, Sam. When you think Kevin Costner, do you think underrated actor?
No, not at all. Not at all. I think of... You know, I mean, it was Field of Dreams. I mean, I guess it's probably the first thing you think of, no?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with properly rated, but our producer, Julian Council, is convinced that his work in that era makes him the most underrated actor of all time.
He literally just underrated him on our show.
I did.
That's all we needed from you, man.
That's perfect.
We appreciate
thanks for all
it, Sam. Thanks for coming on the show.
Now we'll get your smart football take at this point. And I want to ask you, since you're down in Texas, about Texas A&M, because we're trying to figure out sort of what that looks like and where they fall into this power structure and what feels like a jumbled West underneath Alabama.
You know, I mean, they're good but not great. And I think that's the one thing that maybe has frustrated A&M fans, because when they first got in the conference, they started at 11-2 and, you know, kind of took the league by storm under Johnny Manziel. And I think, you know, the fans there thought maybe that's what they're going to come to expect. And then you start investing in facilities the way they did, you know, spending, you know, almost half a billion dollars on Kyle Field and spending, you know, $10 million a year on coaching staff salaries. You figure you're going to start contending for SEC titles, but it's just not that simple. And, you know, they've been all right. You know, they started well and not ended well, but they've been an okay team, but they've not been what you would want when you invest as much as they have so far. So, I mean, I think the important question, and, you know, Kevin Sumlin was asked it plenty last year, is can they finish? You know, can they finish right this time around? Can they finish, you know, well and play better against their SEC opponents? That's been the one thing, you know, for as well as they started. They just haven't been able to finish strong. But like I said, I think they're above your Mississippi States, and certainly right now, maybe not in the last 2 years, but right now, Ole Miss, given what they're dealing with, but they're not quite at the level of Alabama and LSU, and that's what they're trying to be at, given how much they're spending to try and to compete with those teams.
What does Kevin Sumlin want the identity of his program to be? Like, what does Texas A&M want their identity to be?
Well, those might be two different things. I mean, I think Sumlin, just like any coach, bottom line, just wants to win. But, you know, you can tell over the last couple of years as he's made changes that he's trying to make them a tougher football team. You know, I think that's one thing, and he's probably taking exception to it, is that they were looked at when they first got there as a finesse team because they brought, you know, that high-powered air raid style offense, you know, going up tempo all the time. And then when they got, you know, to some of the tougher SEC games, there was times where they got hit in the mouth and maybe couldn't handle. They have not been good on run defense the last 4 or 5 years. So that's, I think, if anything, the changes you've seen over the last few years, adding John Chavis, defense coordinator, this season making a change at the strength and conditioning coach position, he is trying to make them a tougher team that can, you know, last longer and not necessarily fade down the stretch. So I think that probably more than anything has been the biggest onus in this offseason.
We've been talking to ESPN.com Sam Kahn Jr. on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game. So let me wrap my mind around this really basic concept with you. Is, in your mind, Kevin Sumlin the problem?
Depends on if you define being 8-5 a problem. You know, like I said, it depends on what their expectations are. And I think, I think he's a good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach. He certainly hasn't proven to be great yet. But he's getting paid like a great coach. There have been some issues since he's been there. I mean, I thought the way he handled the quarterback situation a couple years ago, it wasn't good. I mean, he mismanaged that situation with Kyle Allen and Kyler Murray, and as a result, both of them transferred. You know, Allen at Houston now and Murray at Oklahoma. And that's why they're here entering, you know, his sixth season, and they're looking for a quarterback when they should be having a three-year starter or some kind of veteran starting. You know, they're going to have either a true freshman, a redshirt freshman, or a senior who walked on, you know, at Oklahoma State a couple of years ago, being the starter this year. And that's a result of his mismanagement. On the other hand, I will say that I think he's evolved as a coach in some ways, and I think he's done a good job of changing some of his philosophies in order to better compete against the SEC. They haven't always worked, but he has been willing to change. I think a lot of coaches you find fall back on old habits and are at times hard-headed because they know what they know and they're going to go with what they know. But, you know, the game has changed so much over the last 10, 15, 20 years, and I think his willingness to change is certainly an asset to him. The question is this all going to work out? And as Scott Woodward, the AD, said, you know, he's got to do better, and I think he's on the hot seat. So we'll find out this year if some of the changes he made are good enough to actually push them forward.
When the Big 12's grant of rights runs out, which two teams are going to the Big Ten and which two are going to the SEC?
I tell you, man, everyone's watching that clock. I mean, you know, Oklahoma and Texas hold the cards here, obviously, because they're the two, you know, big programs in the signature programs in the conference. And, I mean, certainly Oklahoma's made enough noise that makes you wonder, you know, if they're going to seriously explore moving conferences. You know, David Bourne certainly doesn't, you know, he certainly keeps things interesting. So, I mean, the point is they hold their own destiny in their own hands. So, I mean, you know, the Big 12 will rise or fall with the fate of those two teams. If they decide for whatever reason to stay, then the conference can survive. If they don't, then it's not. I mean, that's the bottom line. So, I mean, certainly, you know, you hear rumors about SEC would love to add. Of course you'd love to add a team like it. Who wouldn't love to add a team of that caliber? But the question is, you know, will they take another team? You know, will it take – you know, more than one of those programs? I mean, will one of those conferences take more than one of those programs, or they just go on one, and how does that, you know, factor in everything? I mean, it's a long way away, but it's certainly something that looms, because the more time goes on, the more the revenue gap is created between media rights revenue for the SEC and the Big Ten and the rest of the conferences, the more stressful it is on other programs and athletic directors across the country.
You're listening to Braden and Fitz. We're talking to Sam Kahn Jr. from ESPN.com. So with that being said, if and when that happens and you're looking at conference expansion for the SEC, should they take that opportunity in your mind to do away with divisions completely and just jumble them all together in one conference?
I think they should do that without conference realignment. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the division set up anyways. Just, you know, just put everybody in one division and, you know, because I think what happens is when you have the cross-divisional scheduling like you have now, and then you have the fixed rivalries, it creates a lot of imbalance. So just pick two or three games for every team that you want to do every year, and then just put everybody else and put everybody in one division and just let it roll and just roll like a round robin. Certainly, you're not going to play everybody, you know, in one season, but I think it's silly that some teams will see other teams once every 6 years. You know, and twice in 12 years, it just doesn't make sense. So I think it'd be much better if no conference out there had divisions personally. I mean, you know, the Big 12 does take a lot of slack for things, but one thing I do like they do is that they play everybody. And, of course, it's small enough to do that, but I like that, you know, the way their schedule is set up and, you know, for the conference. So that's one thing I do regardless of whether they expand it or not.
You can read them on ESPN.com. You can follow them on Twitter at SKHahnJr. Sam Kahn Jr.,
preach on, brother. We are anti-division. Preach on, Sam.
And Sam, by the way, your Twitter. I love your Twitter bio. Says America's best dressed sports writer, which I don't disagree with. But you know, Jordan Rogers being up there around the SEC so much, are you going to give him a run? Like, is there?
He's not a sports writer.
I know. But they're both around the same building so much, and the ESPN family gets a little competitive. Like, I'm just trying to find people to put Jordan in his perfect hair down.
TV
just
guys
a little.
Don't count, man. They get guys get stylists and makeup people, man. Sports writers got to do it on their own. So,
I'll give you Edward. Edward Ashcroft will give you a run. All right,
we'll
give
Ed and me have a good, healthy rivalry. In that
there you
country.
Go. There you go.
Follow him on Twitter at Escon Jr. Man, we appreciate your time, Sam. Thanks for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Sam does great work.
Yeah,
down there.
You can't put TV guy in same category as writer guy. TV guy has like a wardrobe budget and hair and makeup people. And
yeah, but the only
that
problem,
ain't cool, dude.
The only problem with that argument is you can't make that argument when your Twitter profile wallpaper picture is you on TV with other SEC network guys.
But that is during a football game, so you're not actually on TV very much.
Yeah, but you're still on TV. You're still lumping yourself in the same category.
You are Jordan Rogers.
Same
will never know.
Category.
We love Jordan Rogers. We have nothing but respect for Jordan Rogers. And keep in mind, I just said with all due respect.
Uh-huh.
So with all due respect, Jordan Rogers will never be confused as a writer. For a writer. So writers are different. You gotta
I'm trying to create some SEC network beef. That's what I'm really trying to do. And that was my attempt. I mean, that's what you do. You try and stir the pot a little bit and then send them along the way. Speaking of stirring the pot, you guys apparently are all stirred up because I said I don't like Field of Dreams and Kevin Costner. So we'll continue that conversation. Also, SEC Media Days could be headed to Nashville. Do you care? We'll get into that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game.
Yeah!
That's right, Sean. You're listening to Braden and Fitz live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc., Mount Juliet. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council back there producing. And so we sort of made a little bit of the internet explode. Callers calling in. I'm going to stick with properly rated. I think that Kevin Costner? Properly rated. I don't usually think of Kevin Costner like as a great actor, but I think he had a great period. Let's say that. Like he had a hot run.
Julian, give me somebody in your opinion that is like super overrated. Like overrated actor or actress. Just super overrated.
Oh, you want this?
Yeah.
Okay. Meryl Streep.
Wow. All right, Trump.
All right. What do you not like about Meryl Streep?
Yeah, what's
Meryl
Streep?
I mean, come on. Like, seriously, Meryl Streep, how many times are you going to be nominated? Like, her percentage for, like, winning Academy Awards and nominations is dreadful. How many times are you going to go up there, get invited to L.A.,
this is like the Atlanta
and
Braves
lose?
Argument.
Yeah, she basically is like the Braves in the
She's
90s.
The Atlanta Braves.
Meryl Streep cannot win.
But wouldn't you want a bunch of division titles?
So, yeah.
Like the Atlanta Braves? Like, that's a lot of championships, even though you didn't win the big one. Meryl Streep's so good that she's nominated all the time. It's not like Meryl Streep, overrated. Wow. Beard Intern is dancing to this take, this hot take, by the way. I'm not sure why.
I think that I didn't realize there was that much feeling one way or the other for Meryl Streep. Like,
All I'm going to say is, like, Kramer versus Kramer, apparently she, like, got an Academy Award for that. I'm sorry, but Dustin Hoffman was the best actor in that movie by far.
All right, give some more. Give me some more hot takes. Give me some more overrated actors.
Angelina Jolie. I'm sorry. Like, Changeling. I like Changeling.
Okay, I'm good with that. I'm on board.
She's not that great. Another one, Brad Pitt. The only reason you guys like him is because he's attractive. That's fine. I watched Ally the other day. And he was okay in Ally. Wasn't amazing. Wasn't great.
I'd be okay with both of those, but I would not be okay with Meryl Streep. I would put the other two in a different category. I'm okay with that, indifferent
to Meryl Streep one way or the other. It doesn't really.
You know who might be? Gwyneth Paltrow might be overrated.
Who?
Name a movie where she was the lead actress.
I've never heard of her.
Do people usually like throw Gwyneth Paltrow out as a great actress? Though?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know. I think she's very well regarded.
I've never in my life heard of Gwyneth Paltrow. So clearly,
that's just not true.
Yeah, that's clearly not true.
So, I've heard of Apple Paltrow.
Talk about overrated.
In and of itself, you name your kid something really stupid, you should be banned from any conversation. Like, you should have to come in and say, I name my kid Apple, and then, like, I'm sorry, you don't get to
work.
You're
automatically overrated.
Yeah, no, you automatically don't get to
work. That's the most notable thing she's ever done, is name her child Apple.
That's,
You didn't like Shallow Hal? With Jack Black?
Yeah, that was a Jack Black movie. No one else was in that.
So let's talk a little bit about something that, because I certainly don't care about Gwyneth Paltrow. The question is, do you guys care about SEC Media Days? Because a conversation that started and is not going anywhere is that SEC Media Days is going to consider moving from Hoover, Alabama. Why you would leave that juggernaut of a city, I'll never understand. But
just so people know, Hoover, Alabama is a small suburb just south of Birmingham. It's basically Birmingham. We went to eat every night in Birmingham.
When I said Alabama, you had it figured out. Like everything you were thinking about Hoover, Alabama, you're right. Okay, don't even Google it. No need. Don't waste the keystrokes.
This ain't Mountain Brook.
Yeah, don't get yourself carpal tunnel over Googling this one. Just go with, I bet I know what Hoover, Alabama looks like. You do. All right. So you've got that figured out. And there's conversation that it may move to Nashville. Nashville is one of a few cities being considered where it could move. The question is, would it be a big deal here? And does anyone really care here? I don't know.
So I kind of saw the article, and I want to say Adam Sparks wrote the article for the Tennessee, and it kind of was out there, and I tweeted it out and said, you know, what do people think of this? And I got a lot of mixed reviews from people. I think there's a lot of people, if you want to go down the financial route and say this is good for the city financially, it's going to bring a lot of people into town, big local businesses, all that stuff, right? Like, that's all true. You have to give it to them. 3,000 or 4,000 people at a convention, that's always good. That's always good, especially you know, the major college football luminaries like the Paul Feinbaums and the Tony Barnharts of the world that come in, and ESPN coming in, and all the major networks coming in, CBS and Fox and all this stuff. That's got to be good for the city. The question is do, like, would fans? I think fans would go the first year because we have a lot of alumni in the city from a lot of different schools. So I think that's maybe why Nashville appeals. First of all, Nashville's a fun place for the media to go party, right? Like, that's what they want to do. They want to go. It's going to be way more fun for the media to come to Nashville than to go to a suburb of Birmingham. Although I'm very pro Birmingham. I think it's growing.
I had a grand old time, by the way.
Birmingham is growing very quickly. I actually like Birmingham a lot, but Nashville is on a different tier. But the question is, do the fans, like, are they going to go down to the lobbies of the hotel? Like, is it going to be a couple of Ole Miss fans, maybe some Tennessee fans, some Alabama fans? I mean, like, I don't know if the fans care all that much.
I don't think they do.
So if that's the case, if people don't care, why not have it here and make money off of it, right, at that point?
I mean, I don't know. The question is, how are you making money? And I just don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Like, I don't know.
It's
how
just
much...
like any other 4,000 person convention that comes into town.
But with all the conventions that come in here, is that one really important enough to book out something?
It's very high profile.
You know, it's.
I mean, when Nick Saban's walking around.
Sure. But it's not even a headline on ESPN today. So it's important to us because we're in the SEC. Is it important to the level that they want to, you know, choose that for? Because a 4,000 person convention, I don't know what that is in relation to what other conventions are, and if it's really like if it's really that engaging, is it worth it? Also, would radio stations be as willing to send people there when you've got an escalated cost of hotel rooms and an escalated cost of being a part of it? I'm sure, because the way it worked is we were at a hotel and we were just essentially in a hallway of the hotel that connected the lobby to a shopping mall. Yeah. So they just take a hallway and they put a bunch of tables in. That's far different than the convention center, which is going to have a massive amount of rent attached to it. It's going to be a different experience there, so it's going to be a different cost to everybody.
But that would be the SEC's cost, because the SEC offices are in Birmingham, so they have a very small cost in operating down there at that particular situation. They would have to, the SEC as a conference would have to spend a lot more money to move it, but that's obviously what they're doing, because they're talking about Atlanta, Dallas, and Nashville being other options for the SEC media event to be at. To me, I think it's good for the city, period. I don't think it's a fan event, though. That's my problem. I don't think it's good for fans. It's great for media, and media like to get down there and drink beer and talk to coaches and talk ball and swap insider stories and, like, do stuff like that, but it's really not a – like, the fans, like we talked about, they show up in the lobby. You got a guy today with a painted dog, by the way. You
right.
know, like – The crazy nut job fan shows up in the lobby, but there's room for like 400 people, maybe less than that, maybe 100 people, and that's all there is. It's not really a fan event, so it's mostly about how much money comes into the economy.
This is just a weird conversation to me, because does anyone outside of the people here talking about in the media actually even care whether a media event is in Nashville or not?
I mean, that's the question.
That's all it is. It's just a media event. Like, who cares about the fans?
Right.
Like, go to work. Get a job, so
but
stay out of the lobby.
In that case, if it generates revenue for the city, even if it's just
because the city's really hurting on getting events and getting revenue.
Yeah, people turn down money all the time, Julian. They always say, "Nope, that's enough money. Don't need any more money." That's how everybody operates, right?
Well, I think that
you're acting like this. They're getting an NBA All-Star game.
No,
like,
it's
a 4-day.
It results
media
in,
event.
According to AL.com, it results in about 329 hotel rooms, which for revenue meant about $220,000 in revenue to that one hotel. So that doesn't include whatever local spending is done. But 329 hotel rooms in Nashville is sort of a pimple on the butt of Nashville when you talk about what some of the massive.
I mean, $1 million in revenue, let's say, roughly guessing, with food and entertainment and the influx of again, all I know is that nobody's ever said, looked at a stack of money and said, that's enough money.
No, but part
no
of what
one's
we
ever
were,
been like, don't give me any more money.
Yeah, but that argument in and of itself doesn't acknowledge the very conversation we had on these airwaves a few days ago when talking about the Music City Bowl. And what the comment was is, now we are at a spot where, as a city, we have to be selective about what we want to bring in, because it's not just a matter of, oh my God, we need an event. It's a matter of, is this the most profitable event
right
now? And so, for example, the NFL draft, which you and I have been a champion of, hey, they should bring the NFL draft in, hearing that they would have to mess with the Music City Marathon is something that never occurred to me. That's a reality. So when you talk about 329 hotel rooms, you're asking that hotel room if that $200,000 in Hoover money, which would be more here because hotels cost more. But the question isn't that versus nothing. It's the question of that versus Corporation X that may bring their...
No question about that.
You know, so it's not just a matter of spitting away money.
The other angle is relationship with the SEC. If you're trying to get the SEC baseball tournament, it would behoove you to kind of go along with what the SEC wants. If the SEC wants to be in Nashville, I just don't know why you turn it down. I don't think the fans care, to all of our points. It's a media event. But if it can generate some revenue and it builds a relationship with the SEC that continues to deepen the ties of Nashville and the SEC, then I think that's good long-term for the city. Again, I don't really, you know, would it be nice to sleep in my own bed every night? Selfishly? Hell yeah, that'd be great. But it's not about that. It's, hey, what's good for the city? And I agree, there's an opportunity cost there you have to evaluate. But if it's a little extra revenue and it builds a relationship where you have an SEC basketball tournament, Final Four or NCAA tournament games, you're trying to get the baseball tournament, you could not get that last year. That's why Scott Ramsey was down there, is to continue to build that relationship with the SEC. So if Greg Sankey comes to you and says, hey, we want to hold an event in your city, generally you say okay.
Well, it'll be an interesting conversation to see what you guys want. Would you check out SEC Media Days if they were in Nashville? We want to know. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. Would you care if SEC Media Days, do you want them here? Is it something that you'd be engaged in going to? Do one of you guys want to be the guy with the championship belt and a 10-foot championship ring walking around the halls? We'll continue the conversation on the other side. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.